This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Homesdale Radio Preview Podcast, sponsored by fanduel.co.uk, the next generation of fantasy football.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Homesdale Radio Preview Podcast, episode 32. I'm your host, Terence Ford of VenablyArmy.co.uk, and we are in your ears for the final preview of the season, a thankfully dead rubber match at Old Trafford. Nick Philpott and Lucy White join me to discuss all things Palace, including previewing the match against Mourinho's United, offering up inevitably terrible predictions, and remembering the FA Cup final of 2016. Also joining the show will be cycling the season man Stephen Kingdom to give us the highlights of his journeys this term. And BAFTA winner and Palace fan John Petrie will join the team to recall what was an epic Sunday for him. Before all of that, remember to head over to hrlradio.net/subscribe to ensure that you never miss another whole radio podcast. Yes, it's the last show of the season. I can't believe we've got here, guys. The guys being Nick and Lucy, welcome to the show.
Hello, evening, mate.
Terence.
How are you?
I am feeling a lot better after Sunday. Anyone who would have seen me before the game would have known that I was a very, very nervous bee until 3 minutes in. We did something very un-Palace and took the lead and put the game to bed within half an hour. So it was a very refreshing Sunday. But
So do you two actually remember much about it?
I remember it all because there wasn't much drinking time before the game, being a 12 o'clock kickoff. And then straight after the game, we went for a curry. So we do an end of season meal with me and all my mates. So we went for a curry in Elmer's End, Spice Society, if anyone knows that place. Very, very tasty, decently priced, nice buffet on a Sunday.
Okay, again, you're not going to get a free meal out of it. But the place was rocking, wasn't it? I can't remember seeing it as good as that.
Yeah, it was great fun. I got to South London about 11 o'clock. You could tell everybody was buzzed all along the Homesdale Road. You know, the people in the pub. Yeah, there were a few people that were nervous, but I think the sun was shining. Everyone was really happy, you know. And then you get into the ground and then the HF had all their stuff out on the Homesdale seats and everybody else was sort of milling around. And all of a sudden, you know, the atmosphere just lifted. And yeah, it was a great, great Sunday.
It was. I enjoyed it a lot, I must say. But going into the week, some things that have surprised me, I really did think that that would be the last 5 minutes would be the end of Damien Delaney loose. But news tells us that he has signed a new one-year extension. Was you surprised at that?
Yes, I was. You know, he's not been prolific. I don't think he ever has been prolific, but he's certainly been a huge part of the team. But this season, he's had his ups and downs, and he's not been picked first like he had been. I mean, you know, he wasn't even picked when he was the only centre-back as an option. So that tells you a lot. But, you know, I think he's somebody that he's the type of player we still need around. whether or not he plays, he's that leadership figure. You know, I know he's not captain, but he certainly has that presence within the team. And I think he actually really loves Palace and what it means, because if it hadn't been for Dougie and Palace, his career would have been over a long, long time ago. And, you know, he might have been working in, you know, Tato Crisps factory in Dublin or something. But it was surprising, but I'm really pleased. And I know there's a lot of people that aren't happy about that. And it's sad to see somebody that's done so much for the club get so much stick on social media, because regardless of who it is, everybody knows that I love Damo, but regardless of who it is, none of our players deserve that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was surprised at the amount of stick that he got for it. You know, Steve Parish spoke on the Holmesdale Radio podcast on Sunday about, you know, the new contract for Speroni and feeling like he deserves that to get that sort of year extension. And I mean, do you think he's done the same with Delaney? He thinks that, you know, he deserves to give him that one final year for the work that he's done for the club since he signed, Nick?
Listen, he's been a statesman for the club for the last... How long has he been with us now? 5 years, is it? 6 years? He's been a rock back there. Okay, he may well be coming to the end of his days a little bit as a player. What we need up there is... And he's actually already proved his worth for us next season by stepping in when he has this year. He's not going to be the first choice, and I think he knows that. It's a bit like the Speroni contract. He's not going to be first choice, and he knows that. But he's happy to see out his playing days with Crystal Palace. And I think, A, the club are to be commended for it, but B, Damien Delaney is, because I think he richly deserves one more deal.
Yeah, I was thinking that one more deal might come in the States or something like that, and I was so sure that it was going. I'd fully prepped an article talking about his time at the club, and it's going to have to go on the back burner for a year. Yeah, and obviously, in other news, Speroni signed extensions to his contracts, and reports are that we've opened talks with Wilf to give him another contract extension. I think that'll be something like his 72nd contract extension since we've re-signed him from Man United. So only good things can come from that. I'm sure we'll be paying him a pretty penny, but there's no doubts that he deserves it, especially with his Player of the Year season that he's had. Incomings, there's been lots of links already. Transfer window isn't even over yet, let alone the transfer window opening. I'm going to throw some names at you loose. Does anyone stand out other than the obvious of Mamadou Sakho, who, you know, I think it's clear that we're going to probably pay what Liverpool want for him. So we've got Joe Hart, Kone from Sunderland, Defoe from Sunderland, Fabian Delph from Man City, and someone called Kinesis from Udinese's goalkeeper. That's who he was. Any of those stand out?
Joe Hart, definitely. I think he would be it would be a ridiculous signing, but in the
sense we'd pay 20 mil for him.
Don't see why not.
That's what Man City want.
I don't know if we pay 20 million if we paid 30 for Sakho. And there's, you know, there's rumours saying that if we buy Sakho, then Hennessy will stay between the sticks as number one. But, you know, I think Hart's very ambitious for us. But, you know, why not go for him? You know, he's a reputable goalkeeper. He certainly would do a fantastic job for us.
And he's better than Hennessy.
Well,
I'm better than Hennessy.
Yeah, I think he would be a great signing for us. But like I say, I don't know if we'd go for that sort of calibre when we're forking out for Sakho.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Nick, I was surprised to hear Fabian Delph in there, but the more I thought about it, he's done well when he's got playing time in the past. Would that interest you?
I'll be honest with you, it doesn't really float my boat. I don't know anything about the other goalkeeper, but Fabian Delph and Kone... Do we really want to go down the avenue of bringing in relegated players? Okay, we should be the same with Defoe as well. I was talking to somebody in Leeds yesterday about the potential Defoe and Benteke partnership. I mean, that would scare many a Premiership team with the two wide men and Defoe. I don't know what system we would play, but Fabian Delph, he's a good player. He's a very good player. He probably is actually outstanding, if I'm honest with you. But he's not one that really excites me. I think Lucy's absolutely right. A lot of it will link around the Sacco move, and whether or not we go for Hart will be influenced by the Sacco move. And I think she's spot on.
And I think also, go on, Luce.
Sorry, I was going to say, but can you imagine if we signed the likes of these players, the start of next season, and you see our team sheet, and you've got Joe Hart, you've got Mamadou Sakho, Johan Kabai, Wilfried Zaha, Andros Townsend.
Enough.
Jermaine
Defoe and Christian Benteke. It's like, what the hell?
This is Crystal Palace you're talking about. It doesn't happen like that.
Where's Jimmy Kebbe?
Jimmy Kebbe and Jerome Thomas on either flank.
Yeah.
Do you know what it does sound like? It sounds like when you're 4 or 5 seasons into a game of Football Manager and you've signed a load of good players for Palace.
It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant that we're in that position now to think that we can get the players of this calibre. But it's just it just makes me laugh. It's crazy. Really
How proud does it make you feel though, Luce? I mean, when you've been linked with players like that.
Really proud. I'm sat here, I'm grinning. Cheshire Cat, thinking it's brilliant. And the fact that we're going into our 5th season in the Premier League. Why can't we look for players like this?
But I will temper it, although as long as they fit the mould, they better come in and fit the mould, because I don't want people just coming and picking up a pretty penny because we're paying it. And that's So wipe that grin off your face for now.
before you move on, Tel, do you think Johan will go?
I really hope not. I think he's shown his value just in the game against Hull, like just being on the pitch. He suits our system perfectly. I think he brings the best out of Punchin and Milivojevic. And I think it would be a disaster to lose him. Perhaps if we brought in a player like Fabian Delph, I don't think they're in the same bracket. But, we'd need to sign big in order to replace Kabaya. And it will all depend, I guess, 1 year left on his contract, his age, how much people are prepared to pay for him. And if the money's right, then we might sell him. But I don't think there's any doubt.
He's on big wages as well, though, isn't he? So by releasing,
I don't think he's on as big. I don't think he's probably in the top 5 earners, but I think we've probably been paying quite a lot more for players since we've signed Kabai. So, and there's been no contract extension for him. So he would have been the top earner when he came in, but I'm not 100% sure that he is anymore. Anyway, look, we're dragging. John Bostock, he's won Ligue 2, that's right, isn't it, too? Player of the season with Lens. And Simon Jordan, obviously piped up on Twitter, said, not quite what was anticipated at Palace for John Bostock when I turned down Barcelona offer of 1.5 million for a then 14-year-old. A lot of people asking the question, would you take Bostock back? Nick, would you take Bostock back? I mean, I think a lot of the question around is he actually good enough?
Of course he's not. I mean, I think the best thing you said in there was duh. Okay, duh. Why would you take somebody back who didn't make it? He really didn't make it. I mean, he was a complete outcast at Tottenham when he left us. He was led away for the reasons by his family. And it was all for the dollar, and it didn't work out. I feel sorry for the lad, okay? But would I want him back in our team? Absolutely no. No, I would not.
It's not very sentimental, is it, Lucy? What about you?
No, I don't think I would. I think you need to... You shouldn't look back, I guess. And as Nick's pointed out, it was a bit of a flop, really. And it was through no fault of his own. You know, he saw a chance and took it, and unfortunately it was his own downfall. Came a bit greedy, but you know, fair play to him. He is doing well. He's got that chance now, but I don't think it would be the right move for us to re-sign him.
Well, there you go. Holmesdale Radio has said it. No John Bostock for Crystal Palace. Right, we're going to take a short break, and then after that we will be with BAFTA award winning Crystal Palace fan John Petrie.
Holmesdale Radio Preview Podcast, sponsored by fanduel.co.uk. The next generation of fantasy football.
Now, Sunday against Hull was a very stressful game for me, that was enough excitement for one day. But now we're joined by a Palace fan, John Petrie, who, after the whole game, had to head off for a little thing called the BAFTAs. Welcome, John.
Hello.
Hello. that was a pretty action-packed Sunday for you.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was genuinely, like, I know it's sort of often said, but if Carlsberg did sort of Sunday, that would be like the most perfect. Yeah, it was perfect. It was like the most perfect day. It was brilliant. It was genuinely, though, the most exciting moment was actually when Zaha scored, because it just relieved so much built-up stress in the last few weeks, and the whole crowd just sort of relaxed a bit, didn't they? It was amazing.
Yeah, I think a lot of us had convinced ourselves that we was going down. Obviously, you know how much pre-match I was talking about me being really worried that they were going to do us and then do Tottenham the following weekend and we'll go down.
Yeah, I thought we would too.
Yeah, I know. You're sitting behind me biting your nails in Block B. so what is it? So you obviously, the 4-0 was just, you know, it was the easy part of the day. We got that out of the way, done and dusted. And you head off. So what happens when you get to the BAFTAs? I assume loads of people were taking your picture as you was walking down the red carpet.
Well, yeah. I mean, no one gives a toss who I am, but like, I was with the boys. So the show's called People Just Do Nothing, in case people don't know it. And we were up for Best Scripted Comedy. And you arrive and you walk down the red carpet, but it absolutely started pissing it down when we got there. So we sort of ran inside. And then we kind of, in all honesty, we just didn't think we were going to win. We thought... Fleabag, which was one of the other things we thought that was like the favourite because everyone kept talking about it. So yeah, when they said our name, it was just amazing. And then we were sat one row in front of Cuba Gooding Jr., who was just behind me, so that was quite cool. It was amazing.
And Chabuddy G, one of the characters in the show, was up for best male actor or best supporting actor? Which one was he up for?
No, best male comedy, yeah. He was beaten by Steve Coogan.
I felt that was a bit unfair. But
well,
yeah, because obviously...
Like Steve Coogan's not won enough.
Yeah, exactly right. But obviously, Fleabag had picked up an award early, and when I was watching the show, I was like, oh, I think that's a really bad sign. For the Scripted Comedy Award, but when it was announced, when they opened the envelope, said People Just Do Nothing, I jumped up, kicked the table over. I was making wedding decorations at the time. They went everywhere. My whole house came running into the living room, thinking what had happened. And I was just like, "Oh, my mate just won a BAFTA." I've been telling everyone, mate. I'm super made up for you.
Yeah, it's so nice because it's one of those things where. It's because it's on telly and stuff and people know what they are. It's like, you know, normally with your work, no one really knows those sorts of things. But that was kind of, I feel very, very lucky. So it's been lovely.
So one thing that they do on the BAFTAs is they do a death roll, like all the people that have died through the year. So having won a BAFTA now, does that mean you get on that when you die?
No, I'll have to win a couple more before I get that honour.
And is the after party like everyone at the BAFTAs goes to the same thing, or do you go off and do your own thing?
No, it's all because the show's at the Royal Festival Hall. So like, I don't know if you've been there, but there's the main sort of room, and then with a theatre in, and then below that is sort of where you have your dinner, and then everyone, but it goes on for the actual ceremony, because on telly it's 2 hours, but the actual ceremony is about sort of 3.5-4 hours, and then you're sort of dead after that, and then you have a meal about 11 o'clock, and then it shuts at 2. But I had to go home. I was a bit overcome with emotion by the end of it all.
I bet. Any stories that you can share from the after party?
No, I'm really boring, actually. I was trying to think. I mean, I got absolutely hammered, but I didn't do anything sort of bad, really, and didn't really see any naughtiness going on around me. So it was a bit boring, sorry.
Oh, Well, it was, I think, a boring end is what you needed to that day. So anyway, look, we wanted to get you on so everyone at Hull Radio could say congratulations on your award. And we look forward to you bringing it and parading it around Selhurst Park at some point.
But yeah, no, I genuinely, the first part of the day, Palace Day and up, I was just so relieved and so happy about that, because that, I'm not very good at dealing with sort of stress related with Palace, and this season's just been sort of pretty miserable at times. I remember, like, after the Sunderland game, that was just such a low point, and I'm amazed that we made it. I think, I wanted to ask you what you think of Sam Allardyce now, because I know you were so anti.
What a great question, John.
Everyone's trying to stitch me up with this. My opinion still remains exactly the same. I said at the time, and as I always say, this is the wonderful thing of doing recorded media, is that I can go back and play all the clips. I said at the time, I think he has an easy job. I think with the squad of players that we had, with money available to spend in January, I didn't doubt for a second that he'd keep us up. Well, maybe for a few seconds in the last few weeks when it all went a bit pear-shaped. But I always thought that he'd do a good job, and he was on to an easy win. But my opinions of him as a person remain the same. I kind of feel a bit better that he has Sammy Lee next to him, because that gives me something on the bench that I can warm to. And I bumped into him after one of the games recently. I can't remember which one. And had a little chat with him, and he seems like a really nice, down-to-earth guy. Although I guess some Palace fans who remember him from his playing days might not say the same thing. But no, my opinions are the same of Allardyce. It's going to be interesting to see now how he does. Steve Parish obviously has said recently that on the whole radio on Sunday, actually, we need to be a bit more cautious with how we try and push on now, because we perhaps did it a bit too much this season. So maybe that would suit Allardyce in the sense that he can spend a couple of years just getting mid-table finishes, and then we'll see where we go from there. We'll see if he's got it in his locker to take us to the next level or not. But only time will tell with that. But
can I ask John a question?
Yeah, of course.
John, very quickly. Crystal Palace secure another year in the Premier League or the BAFTA award? Which one comes top?
Do you know, in all honesty, I think I would go for Palace, just because over the course of a year, like, the emotion that, you know, the pleasure I get from that is, you know, obviously BAFTA is like a career highlight, but Palace is just such a huge part of my, you know, life, and sort of every weekend going along to Selhurst Park and seeing everyone, and I don't know, it's tricky. I actually do genuinely think Palace, probably.
Proper football fan, well done.
I'll take the BAFTA relegation and then win the championship next season with 110 points. I think that was the
not
right
when
answer.
Brighton have gone up. Not when Brighton have gone up.
He says all the right things, doesn't he, guys?
Doesn't he? Proper for Palace fan.
Yeah. Anyway, John, look, thank you so much for joining us, pal. I'll have no doubt that we'll have you back on at some point next season. Anyway, so enjoy
I'd
the
love,
summer.
Love to. I could talk about Palace to them, red and blue in the face.
Good man. Congratulations, John.
Congratulations,
pal.
Speak to you soon.
Homesdale Radio Freeview Podcast, sponsored by fanduel.co.uk. The next generation of fantasy football.
Right, so just before that jingle there, that was BAFTA winning John Petrie. I still can't get used to saying it. He's a really good friend of mine, and I'm so made up for him. And so I'm just wanting to get him on and congratulate him and raise awareness of his show. If it needs any more awareness raised a bit after winning that on the weekend. Right, let's get about what we're here to do, and let's preview the Man United game. Mourinho said that he's going to make a bunch of changes, and at the time of recording, Manchester United are currently playing against Southampton. I don't know about you, Nick. This lineup to me doesn't look that terrible in terms of Romero in goal, and I believe he saved a penalty in this one. Bailey is playing. Obviously, he'll be suspended for the Europa League final, so we'll be likely to play against Palace on the weekend. Chris Smalling, Phil Jones, Darmian, Fellaini, Axel Tuanzebe,
You're the well known.
No idea who he is. Neither am I. One Mata, Martial, Mkhitaryan, and Rooney. It's not a terrible team, is it?
You know, there's nothing there that scares me anymore. You used to have this thing about Man United where it didn't matter what team you put out, you just knew they were going to have world-class players in front of you. You got the ageing Rooney in there. Martial's doing well. Even One Mata's ageing. I haven't got a clue who that Talibuzzi is you're talking about. Fellaini's just a haircut, isn't he? There's nothing there that's particularly frightens me and particularly bothers me. The beauty about it is we can go up there relaxed, yeah, to a point our season's over, and if we put in a performance, well, great, okay, but if they go up there and relax and enjoy themselves, I reckon they can come away with some sort of result.
Yeah, I think, Lucy, me and you grew up in the generation of Manchester United dominating everything, and Nick's absolutely right there in terms of the teams used to just scare you. You just look at it and all across the field was great, great players, and some of them world-class players, especially when you look at the likes, I guess, of like Ryan Giggs and Paul Scholes in their times. And what do you think about that lineup? I really rate Mkhitaryan. I think Martial on his day can be dangerous, but you know, Rooney up top, it's not very scary anymore. Fellaini, Darmian, Jones, are they names that scare you?
Not really, but some of these names aren't familiar, so we don't really know what they can bring to the game. So it's kind of a little bit of fear of the unknown more than a fear of the known.
Do you think it's with the players as well being fringe players that they're going to have a point to prove to Mourinho?
Yeah, obviously, like, because, you know, I think that Man United are going to have a shake-up next season, and I think that the likes of Bailey, he was unfortunate to get sent off the other week. Was it last week?
Unlucky to get sent off. He punched someone in the face, didn't he?
Was that what he did? I can't remember.
I think Eric Bailey got sent off for punching someone in the face in the Europa League semi-final.
Oh, well, then he did get himself sent off. But, you know, he's someone that's up and coming for Man United. So, I guess that there weren't going to be points to be proved.
And if you look at our bench as well, players like Dimitri Mitchell, never heard of him, Joel Pereira, Scott McTominay.
Who?
So, exactly. Who? So, these are players that, you know, you never know, might get put in. But, I mean, United, thankfully for you, I don't want to say thankfully for United, because I just don't really care about them enough for it to be thankfully, but, you know, Mourinho might have been in for a fine for fielding weakened teams if we was in a relegation battle, but obviously we're not anymore. But, you know, the difference between if we finish in 17th, merit money for the season, we get 7.6 million. If we finish in 11th, win that game and finish in 11th, which is as high as we can finish, we get 19 million, which is obviously a fair bit of bunts. And when you're looking at how much we're going to have to pay for Mamadou Sakho and the players that we potentially want to bring in and give him Wilf a new contract, you know, playing for an extra, what is that, 11.4 million, that's a fair old whack of money, isn't it, Nick, when you're just putting it down to one game, win, and it's 11 million prize money.
That's interesting, because I didn't realise the gulf between 17th and 11th was as big as that. I don't think
it's about 2 million a place, yeah.
Wow. I mean, the thing is, it's not just Man United going to be playing a weakened team. Obviously, I think we will, because we know that Tompkins and Kabay were injured at the weekend and played through the pain barrier. So we'll also be playing with a weakened squad as well. But, I mean, that money is just, as you say, that's half of the fee for Mamadou Sakho, isn't it?
Yeah, but do you put, if they are 85% fit, Kabay and Tompkins, you make them play through the barrier again with that money in mind?
If I was Allardyce last week, I would have said to both of them, look, we'll get you your cortisone, or not, it's not cortisone anymore, but your injections, your pain relief injections, go out. We need these 3 points. I'm not interested in Man United. If we get the result against Hull City, get on the beach, enjoy your summer, because you've earned the right. And I think that's probably what he'll do, if I'm honest.
So, Luce, what do you think if, assuming that obviously we haven't heard who's fit and who's not fit yet, that happens on Thursday, probably by the time you've listened to this, listeners, you will know what the team is. But if we've got a stronger side than United on paper, do we attack them? Do we go there and take the game to them, or do we stick to our regular style?
No, I think we attack them. And I think I disagree with Nick. I think that we should, if Tompkins and Kombi are 80-85% fit, I think we play like we did last week or Sunday. You know, sub them at a point in the game, but utilise the fact that it is a weaker, I say weaker in inverted commas, weaker Man United squad. And, you know, we're playing for, yeah, okay, we're safe, great. But like you've pointed out, we're paying for a higher position and more money. Why not go all out and attack them?
Indeed. I'm sceptical. I agree with you in the sense that I think we, if they're 85%, we probably should play them with the prize money in mind and them having the whole season to recover, especially if it's something that they can't aggravate too badly. But I think I'd stick to our game plan that we've employed so well in terms of just when we try and break teams down and push them back, I think we struggle to break them down. Sitting a bit deeper and hitting on the counter, I think, might benefit us a little bit better, especially with the pace that we have in Townsend and Zaha and so on. But it'll be interesting to see how we approach it, because it's going to be a bit of a weird game, I guess. I know, Nick, is it time we end the hoodoo?
Yeah, we haven't had an awful lot of luck up there, have we? I think we will get something out of this week's game. I really do, because their focus of attention isn't Crystal Palace, is it? Their focus of attention is the final. I honestly believe that we will go up there and get a result. I'm not saying we're going to go up there and get a win, but I think we'll get some sort of result. I'll go further than that. We won't lose.
Oh, well, we'll save that for predictions later. And Lucy, we're gonna remember the classic match, the cup final in the classic match section a little bit later on. We can't call it revenge, but it would just be nice on the, you know, a year to the day later to the FA Cup final to get a win at Old Trafford.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I support two football teams. I support Crystal Palace and anybody that plays Man United, unless it's Brighton. So I despise the club. I think, you know, any decent Crystal Palace fan will understand that hatred, and I would just love to get 3 points off them.
Yeah, but I think we can all agree with that. Right, we'll end that there. Next up, we're going to be joined by a man that I've watched from afar with awe this season. That will be Stephen Kingdom, who at Old Trafford on the weekend will be completing his mission to cycle to every Crystal Palace game this season. Quite an incredible feat. So up after this jingle will be Stephen.
Homesdale Radio Preview Podcast, sponsored by fanduel.co.uk. The next generation of fantasy football.
Right, 7,100 miles, 550 hours in the saddle. He's been to every Crystal Palace game but one this season, because he had to start his journey to travel to Sunderland away before the game at Southampton in the League Cup had even kicked off. The person I'm talking about there is Stephen Kingdom, who has been cycling the season this year in aid of Contact a Family, a charity that supports family with disabled children across the UK. They provide information, advice and support, and bring families together so they can support each other. Stephen, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me back, Terence. Good to speak to you.
No worries. It's, we spoke way back around, I think, maybe September time. That was when we spoke, when you was very early on in your journey. What'd you do?
Preview for the Liverpool game, I think.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So what do you do during the week? Do you just stand up the whole time? Because I imagine your bottom must be quite sore after all those hours and miles.
Yeah. actually my it held out better than I thought it might. Backache's a bit more of an issue than my bottom. But yeah, it's a bit of relaxing in between. Spending time with my kids. I've got two small kids. So I tend to take on most of childcare when I'm not cycling to make up for that. I leave my wife with them on her own when I'm taking a week to get up to Sunderland or wherever.
Mm. Yeah, well, let's talk about Sunderland. So that's obviously the longest trip of the season, 659 mile round trip. So what was that? You headed out on a Tuesday and Palace were playing on the Wednesday? Is that about right?
No, Sunderland was a Saturday. So I started on the... I headed out on the Wednesday and...
and we were at Southampton that night, yeah.
Yeah, we were at Southampton on the Wednesday night when I'd done my first 110 plus miles. Took 3 days to get up there. Stayed the Friday night in Sunderland. At a guest house where the owners were Sunderland fans and their son played for the youth team. I was a bit worried going back after the game.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Because I stayed there Saturday night as well, and I thought, after we won 3-2, coming from 2-0 down, I might not be very welcome back, but they were great. And then, yeah, set off home on the Sunday and got home on the Tuesday night.
And quite amazingly, when did you set off for the Everton game, the following away game?
Yeah, so next morning I took the kids to school, came home and then set off for the Everton game, which was the one that was on the Friday night.
Yeah, so that's 1,169 miles in 13 days. Were there any points during those 13 days that you just thought, screw this?
never quite screw this, but I had a couple of... I had some issues with a couple of broken spokes on the way up to Sunderland, and then my route planner sent me onto what was allegedly a cycle path, but actually just turned into a mud, just mud, and I had to push the bike until I could find the road
again.
Just
what you need.
At that point, I was thinking, well, you know, why am I doing this? But actually, most of it was just great, and you know, at that point, we were winning some games, weren't we? You know.
We were indeed. You say here, though, West Brom was the worst journey of the bunch so far.
Yeah, I did it quite a short journey to West Brom. So I did a long day up to Warwick, stayed in Warwick, and then did 30 miles each way on the match day to get back to Warwick, and then cycled to 113 miles home from Warwick on the day after the match. And it was wet, it was windy. I had a problem with my gears. After I stopped for lunch, I got back on the bike in Oxford and it started to hail. then the last bit of the journey, it got warm, but I'd taken off my waterproofs. Then the rain came again. I didn't get the waterproofs back on in time. I was freezing and soaking. By the time I got home, I thought I'd got hypothermia. I mean, to tell you how bad it was, my wife generally doesn't give me any sympathy, but she was like, I'm going to run you a bath, you look really terrible. but you know, at least we won the game, so it was a good one from that point of view.
Yeah, it was. You got to score a great goal there with Andros Townsend's run from inside his own half. Also managed to make a home game practically an away game with a rearranged Arsenal fixture.
That's right. Yeah, it was in the Easter holidays and we'd worked out we were going to go for a little break to the New Forest and it was all sorted. So we'd go, I'd get to go to the Arsenal game and then we'd go down there and then they moved the game to the Monday night. So I ended up going on holiday with the family and leaving them there and cycling back on the Monday to see the game and then cycling back to the New Forest on Tuesday to rejoin the holiday. That was about an extra couple of hundred miles I hadn't planned on.
I thought that was a bit harsh of Twitter because you put that to a poll on Twitter, didn't you? Whether you should cycle it or take transport.
I did.
Overwhelmingly cycle.
Yeah, I kind of figured that's what would happen. I'd made the decision, really. I think if I was relying on Twitter to be nice to me, I was a bit stupid, really, wasn't I?
I am touching wood when I say this. Not that sounds really bad. Let me finish my sentence. You've only had one accident in your whole journey, which is quite amazing when you're considering you've been in the saddle for 550 hours and a tired body and so on. So how did the accident occur?
Yeah, it's quite embarrassing, really. I was just coming home from the home game, Bournemouth, back in August, and I just came up to the traffic lights in Wallington, at Wallington Green, by the Duke's Head, for anyone who knows it. And I changed gear as I was coming up the lights, and it hadn't gone into gear properly. And as I went to pull away, the chain sort of jammed, and I just went flat on my side with no one else involved, about 4 miles from home. You know, it just felt so stupid, given all the cycling I was going to be doing, that I couldn't even manage a ride home without falling off. Been all right.
Yeah, since then, yes, indeed. That's why I said touch wood. Sorry, we have some very...
Yeah.
Listeners will be picking up on innuendos left, right and centre. You've obviously had some great great experiences this year. Holloway, you got to spend that in the director's box with was that Steve Parrish? How was that experience?
That was really good, yeah. Steve Brow invited me and Steve Parrish invited me, and it was really interesting. I mean, we all know that classic picture of the Steve Parrish and Mark Bright sitting next to each other watching the games, while I was basically sitting in the chair directly behind them.
Well, do you know what was written in the note? Because he handed over, was that the game he handed the note over in?
No, it wasn't. I don't think it was. No, I think that was a different one. What I did see was quite how mad, and understandably, how mad Steve Parrish was about Robert Snodgrass's dive. And how they were sitting nearest the guys with the laptops with all the, you know, analysis of the game. He was getting them to replay it to him, and he was understandably fuming.
Yeah, I bet. And also, Hole laid on Dean Windass and Brian Hughes for you as well.
Yeah, that was good. It was quite funny timing, because I didn't realise until I got to the director's box afterwards that Dean Windass had been declared bankrupt the day before. So I don't think he was in a great mood. Brian Hughes was very chatty, and he was a really nice guy, and he was asking about Andy Johnson, because obviously they played together at Birmingham. And then as the conversation moved on, he started reminiscing on that certain game in 2005 when we drew to all of Charlton. And we all remember Jonathan Fortune scored the second goal, but if Brian Hughes hadn't decided to remind me, I wouldn't have remembered he'd scored the first. And I really didn't need to be reminded of that. But anyway, he was really nice, and he was really supportive.
That's awesome. And obviously you got to go to the training ground and spend some time with the team. And it was just after the Sunderland and Stoke game, wasn't it? So we'd lost 4-0, lost 1-0, and then you go to the training ground and, hey presto, we start winning games.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm taking the credit. No, I was talking to Sam about things, and then he said to the players when they were doing the photos, he said that if we weren't safe before the Man United game, they'd have me to answer to. And, you know, here we are, Man United game to go, we're safe. So I'm taking the credit. Now, you know, I know people think it's down to Sacco and Luca and the fans, but I'm taking the credit for it.
Right, so you've raised £14,000 so far of your £15,000 target. So how can people go and donate to your cause?
Yeah, easiest way is Just Giving site. So it's justgiving.com/cyclingtheseason, all one word, and just chuck some money in there. It'd be great. Thanks very much.
Yeah, so hopefully if everyone who listens to this goes and throws a pound in, we'll easily clear his £15,000 target for him. And I think it's a very, very worthy cause that you've done it for. And I was saying just that, before you came on the line, how I'm absolutely in awe of what you've done, mate. A couple of seasons ago, we were talking about the possibility of just doing this cycling to and from Sunderland, and just the pure logistics in involving just one game was mind-boggling, and we ended up not doing it. So to do every single game is quite astonishing, and you should be really proud of that achievement.
Cheers. Thanks very much, Taylor.
No worries, mate. And we will get you back on next season to listen to you what you ended up on as a final target and so on, and see what your next crazy plan is in supporting Crystal Palace.
Yeah, great. Thanks very much.
All right, good luck on the journey up to Manchester, mate.
Cheers. Bye.
Homesdale Radio Preview Podcast, sponsored by fanduel.co.uk.
The next generation of fantasy football.
Right, so now predictions time. Last week, Lucy, can you remember what you said?
Yes, it was 2-2.
2-2. Mr. Philpott, you said a 2-0 win. You were the closest on the grounds that you was the only one who predicted Palace to win.
No, it's still way off.
Yeah, I don't know. You said two goals both in the second half. We did score twice in the second half, so you're not that far off. And obviously,
half right.
Yeah, for the just you know for the lads, I predicted Palace to lose just because that's I think that's my role in things now, isn't it? Yeah, that's pretty much what we do.
That is tradition. That's right, absolutely right. One that we will continue next season.
Yeah, so we're we're notoriously terrible at predicting games, and this is probably the hardest game of the season to predict, given the unknown lineups that we're going to be putting out and so on. On the poll on Twitter, 67% of Palace fans have suggested that Palace will win the game at Old Trafford on the weekend. 22% have said draw, and only 11% have said Manchester United. I don't know if that's been hijacked by Liverpool fans or something. I don't know quite know what's going on there, but they all seem very, very confident. How confident are you, Lucy?
Do you know what? I don't really care.
It's the right answer. It's the right answer.
I would absolutely love to beat them. But, you know, it's, I don't care. We're going to win 2-1 anyway.
Okay. And is that going to be Bo from Benteke?
No, I'm going to say it'll be Wilf and Townsend.
Okay, and Nick Nostradamus Philpott.
Okay, I can't make my mind up between a 1-1 draw or a Desmond, so I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw. And to celebrate his new contract, it'll be Damo from a set piece, and that's because we got Lucy on the line. Damo from a corner.
What, from 35 yard free kick? He's just going to ping it top bins.
No. From a corner. He's going to head in from a corner. Damo to get our equaliser.
To shut the haters up as well.
I'm just flicking through Twitter there, and I've seen a prediction from our very own Billiam. So, Billiam, get yourself off mute, mate.
Yeah, come on in, mate.
Come and have a chat to us.
Go on then. You're right.
What was your prediction?
I'm going to go for 3-1 Palace.
See, it's more optimism. This is way too much optimism. Who's gonna score the goals?
Ooh. I'll go for Zaha. Get one. Benteke. And I'll go with the Damo one as well, just for fun. Why not?
And William, while we got you on the line, mate, okay, on behalf of all the team on the preview pod, thank you for all your hard work.
Cheers, no worries. It's been great fun.
And now everybody knows how posh Billiam is in the background.
We love Billiam.
Right. Okay. Next up, we're going to be participating in some group therapy as we remember last season's FA Cup final.
Homesdale Radio Preview Podcast, sponsored by fanduel.co.uk.
The next generation of fantasy football.
Tries to obscure his view. Fellaini. There's Joel Ward, invited to shoot by the fans. Here's Puncheon. That was well collected and brilliantly finished.
Right, so it's the 21st of May 2016, almost a year to the day of recording, and it will be a year to the day when we play Manchester United. And 88,619 people are heading to Wembley Stadium for the 2016 FA Cup final. Obviously, we'd already been to Wembley a couple of weeks earlier and dismissed Watford 2-1 in the semi-final. And Nick, how was your feeling going into this one, mate? Was you confident going to the final?
I'll tell you what I was actually optimistic, because as we've already discussed earlier in the show, they weren't the all-singing, all-dancing great Man United teams of the past. So I thought if we ever had a chance to do them, this was it. This was the one. They were smug. I remember coming out of the cup final in 1990, and they were smug, horrible.
Keep it PG.
I did. I really did. Really horrible people when they came out of there. And this was our turn to get it back at them. And I, looking at our lineup, looking at how well we've performed, I thought this was our time. And, and we'll talk about it later on, but especially when Punch's goal went in so late, it was our turn.
Yeah, Lucy, are you going to be able to get through this without crying? Because I'm not sure I am.
I can't speak about it. It's horrible. It's remembered pain, and you know, I've never ever rewatched any of it just because I can't bring myself to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of had a feeling. It was the 24th of October. Sorry, the 24th of April was when I knew we'd lost this game, and that was the day that Mark Clattenburg was announced as the referee for the fixture. Obviously, we will never win a Premier League game that Mark Clattenburg referees, because obviously he has departed for pastures new. Thank Hooray. God. but I was clawing at hope, clutching at straws. You know, he was the referee when we won 2-0 at the Amex in the playoff semi-final. So we'd beaten Stoke in this FA Cup run with Clattenburg as the referee. So I was hoping beyond hope that he might be a good luck for a charm for us in knockout competition. But it was pretty early on that it was clear that that wasn't going to be in the case when Conor Wickham gets away from Chris Smalling down the left. He's brought down, rugby tackled to the ground. Conor Wickham is immediately up, running into the penalty area, and Clattenburg decides it's a good idea to blow his whistle instead of playing advantage when Conor Wickham, you know, can score, can square it to Zaha, he can sit down, have a cup of tea and a picnic, get up, still square it to Zaha and score. But Clattenburg blows his whistle. I don't know about you, Nick, but at this point, this is the point where I lost my voice during this game, just screaming at Clattenburg for this decision.
It was just another one of his, I mean, oh, I can't say what's actually inside my head, because all I keep thinking about is that image of him cuddling Ferguson before the game. And I can't say what I really want to say, but it was just what you would expect from that div. Okay, I can do that because he doesn't ref anymore. It was just an awful guy, because he actually did it again in the second half, okay, but this time played the advantage. But that one where Wickham actually put it in the back of the net, I could see that he'd made that decision quite quick. If you listen to the commentary back, you can hear the Palace fans celebrating that they think Wickham scored, okay? But way before that, I could see that he'd made a decision and stopped the game. I think it was probably something to do with my position in the stadium. I was very near the touch, the halfway line. It's just a god-awful decision. And, yeah, again, it's one of those things where you wish that we had access to him to be able to explain what he did and why he did that post-match, or even now, if you like, because he got slaughtered for it in the press, rightly so, because he's a cretin. I just wish that there's some sort of recourse, redress, that you could go back and say to him, why did you do that? Why did you make that decision? Because you probably you cost us the cup.
Yeah, and it's sadly, it wasn't the first time, the only time in the first half that he did this. Zaha got cleaned out by Rooney, and the referee said play on when replay showed that Rooney was clearly nowhere near the ball, and that could have been a penalty. It was, you know, borderline on the edge of the area. And then shortly after that, Joel Wall breaks away from Rojo and it's 3-on-2, and literally Joel's got the whole pitch in front of him to run into. But again, Clattenburg is blowing his whistle too early and not learning from his mistakes, and he calls the game back and another chance is gone. And obviously, you know, he's gone to Dubai now, and part of me hopes that he commits some really sort of tame crime and ends up getting publicly lashed. But, you know.
Part of me hopes he makes a major crime and they cut his hands off. That way he can't blow another whistle, can he?
Yeah, you know, that might sound a bit harsh, but, you know, you look back and, like you already alluded to, Nick, you see him with hugging Alex Ferguson before the game. I mean, how Alex Ferguson, Sir Alex Ferguson of Manchester United, has the opportunity to be anywhere near the officials before the game is quite frankly disgusting.
Quite right.
And, you know, I hate that we have to be bitter, but you know, for him, it's just another bad day at the office. But for us, it's another generation of hurt. It's not just, you know, he just goes home and shrugs it off. And we're all talking about it for another 30 years or 25 years, however long it'll take us to get to the next FA Cup final. Anyway, Hennessy kept us in the game. Saves really well, low down to his right from Juan Mata. And then going into the second half, Fellaini hits the woodwork, Martial hits the woodwork, and we can't really get out of our area. I mean, United have 24 shots on goal in the game, but before they scored a goal, only Mata had found the target from the Hennessy save. Lucy, did you think that penalties at this point was the best we could hope for, as we were just penned back in our own half?
No, I guess I wasn't really thinking about it. I was so caught up in the game that I was just stood there praying that something would happen and we would go on to win it. And that didn't happen.
Oh God, you're still very glum about it, aren't you? But now that moment did come. I mean, we soaked up loads of United pressure in the second half and kept them in areas where they couldn't really hurt us, kept them shooting from range. And then you always felt, I'd said in the build-up to the game that I thought if we could score the first goal, United had struggled to break us down, and they were struggling to break us down before we'd scored. And then, you know, you get to the 78th minute and you always felt that if he was going to do something, it had come from a set piece. And Pungent puts in the corner, it's clear to Joel Ward. I feel like describing this mental, everyone knows exactly what happens. Ward lifts it back out to Pungent. I think it's Martial playing him on the side over the far side. Brilliant decision from the Lino. Well done, linesman. Klattenberg can take some take some advice from you, I believe. And you know, Pungent's first touch isn't great. You know, it sort of bounces up really high, but the way he adjusts his body, clears it out of his feet, and just absolutely hammers it past De Gea. So let's talk about those couple of minutes, Nick. how were they for you?
Again, I've got to select my words carefully, but following them, what is it, 45 years? That has probably got to be up there, because I thought, what was it, 78 minutes into the game, I actually thought we were there. I thought we were home and hosed. I mean, it was a little bit, just the build-up to the goal, it was a bit like the Alamo. I mean, they were taking shots from every angle, hitting the woodwork time and time again. And I thought we were going to lose at that point. For us then to go down and score that goal, it was just, the euphoria around us was just one. And the best part of it all, of course, was the silence. The other side of that, bear in mind, I was on the halfway line, okay, opposite side to Pardew. So I didn't even see Pardew's dance until later that evening. The silence, the other side of the divide where the stewards were, okay, from the main end was, you know, that was ecstasy in itself. But it was, I mean, around us, it was just pandemonium. Fantastic time.
And Lucy, in your little part of Wembley, how was it for you?
It was incredible. I mean, you know, I've experienced two promotions during the playoffs in my life. But that brief spell, those 2 minutes, however long it was, I've never known anything like it. I've never celebrated in that way before. You know, I was fortunate enough to get the tickets for all the people that I sit with. So we were all together like we normally are on a normal match day. My dad was there, and my dad was at the 1990 Cup final as well. So, you know, this was the second time that he'd been through it. It was indescribable, and you just had that sense of we've done it. And you know, I mean, even now, the sort of like the hairs are going back on the back of my neck. It was just, it's indescribable. And to be with like the people that you care about the most, that have that same love and passion for your club, you know, you can talk about it to people at work. You can talk about it to the guy next to you that supports Spurs. You can talk about it to the guy, you know, that's an Arsenal fan or a Scouser, you know. And yeah, they get it. But in that moment, no, nothing else. Okay, so it was a brief amount of time. But it's just so indescribable. And it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, well,
beautifully said, Luce, love. That's great.
Yeah, I read back through my what I wrote about the game after, and I remember thinking back to that. It was a very difficult thing to write, and I said, until we hopefully win a trophy, I'll never forget those moments after the goal, surrounded by the people that I love. We celebrated that goal like none other in my Palace sporting career. I genuinely thought that the wait was over. For 2 minutes, I allowed myself to forget what years of experience had taught me. Wait until the fat lady is singing. I jumped around, I hugged family, friends and strangers, and I basked in the glory of what would have been the pinnacle of our 111-year history. And, it was exceptional, those 2 minutes. But then, you know, Jason Puncham was on the other podcast, not Hambo's one, a couple of weeks ago. And he said it was his most emotional moment in football. He said, I think the whole occasion took me by great surprise in that moment that I scored. Probably to the whistle blew for full time. I didn't realise that I was playing in the cup final. And sadly, and it's not that I'm blaming Jason Puncheon, there was many other phases of play in that run that Rooney made that we could have stopped him. But Puncheon puts in such an abject tackle on Rooney as he's like running in towards our penalty area. And, you know, I remember after the game thinking that that's experience of playing in higher level games from Rooney right there. He'd done nothing all game really. And then when his team needed him for that 1 minute, he just rolled back the years and just brushed people aside, got into the penalty area. Damo done really, really well to push him out wide, but he just dug out an incredible cross to the back post, you know, knew that Fellaini would be there, and Fellaini just peels off his man, chests it down. And then the moment it squirms under Joel Ward for Mata's shot, you just kind of think, this isn't going to be our day. For it to, everything, we've been expelled so much in that 2 minutes, and to get so unlucky so immediately, it was just kind of like, from that point on, I was in bits, if I'm honest. And but then we go into extra time. Benassi has a good shot from range that De Gea tips around the post. But on the stroke of half time and extra time, Chris Smalling finally gets sent off for pulling down Bolasie with yet another rugby tackle. And but I don't know if you remember, it was this big hoodoo that we had of not beating a team all season long when they'd been reduced to 10 men. And there was lots of Palace fans were, instead of thinking, oh my God, we can go on and win this now, were thinking, uh-oh.
we're crap against 10 men, yeah.
And then, you know, Wilfried Zaha put Gal through in what was our only really chance that we had in extra time, and he tries to take the chance early, but De Gea, you know, world-class goalkeeper, denies him with his feet, and then Pardew kills us. If the dance hadn't already killed us, and I've deliberately tried to avoid the dance because just talking about it makes me angry. We switched to 4-4-2, and I don't know whether it was out of Bolasie being injured or tired, really, not injured, just more like running out of steam. And we went to a 4-4-2 just so he could stay up front with Gal. But whatever, it completely changed the momentum of the game. And all of a sudden, United were able to get up the field and create a couple of chances for himself. And then on 110 minutes, this time Puncheon puts in a better tackle on Valencia down the right, but it bounces kindly for Valencia. And Delaney blocks out his cross, but it falls to Lingard on the edge of the area. Jesse King Lingard.
Yeah,
smashes home a perfect volley. I've seen him all season long this season on Match of the Day, smash those wide. And just something about him being Brighton, Nick, as well, having that loan period at Brighton just makes it an extra sickener, doesn't it?
Do you know, I've forgotten about that.
Sorry for ruining everyone's day.
We need to bring this up a bit, but I mean, at the end of the day, it was a great finish, and fair play to him. Our turn on Saturday to get our own back with a bit of luck.
Yeah, well, what was in the aftermath of that? Bob Mortimer of Reeves and Mortimer said, the Palace fans have rubbed the meaning of support pretty forcibly into United fans' faces today, which was quite exceptional. And one of the memories that I'll always take away from the day is as soon as the full-time whistle went, I had to go out back. I just couldn't watch the pitch. And I kind of regret that now because, you know, there was obviously some emotional scenes with players clapping and, you know, sharing their emotion with all of the fans and so on. And I'm kind of sad that I did miss that in the flesh. But as I was sat down out back, a guy walked past me and he came and just crouched down next to me and he said, "Chin up, mate. We have what they can never have. We have us." And I think that is, you know, it is, you know, for us, that meant everything. For them, it's just another trophy in the cabinet. And they'll never know. They'll never understand what it's like to be a Crystal Palace fan. And I know which fence, side of the fence I would rather be on. In my notes here, it says hand over to Philpott. So I have no idea what this means.
No, you don't. So as we're moving to the end of the show, it's the last programme of the season, the last pod of the season. We're looking forward to an important summer. It'll be when the new stadium plans hopefully will be announced and the signing of Sacco will be announced. But much more important than any of that, I believe you have an event coming up this summer, Tal. Would you like to tell the listeners about it?
Yeah, well, I do. On June the 3rd, someone's making an honest man of me. I'm getting married in Islington Town Hall on June 3rd to the very lovely Linda Klotz. And I'm excited about it. Excited and nervous, but
well, I think I can safely say on behalf of all the listeners and especially your Homesdale Radio family, we wish you every happiness, every success, and we hope the day goes wonderfully for you, mate. Good luck to you.
Oh, thanks, mate. Look, we're just gonna go off to a short jingle and then we'll be back.
Homesdale Radio Preview Podcast, sponsored by FanDuel.co.uk.
The next generation of fantasy football.
And with that, we have come to the end of the season. I want to take this opportunity to offer huge thanks to all of you that have listened and supported the Preview Podcast throughout the year. From all over the world, I've been getting messages literally from the other side of the world, in Australia, and, you know, I really feel like I've been blagging it for the entire time, but the feedback suggests that you've enjoyed it. So I'm glad that we've been able to give you some Palace related entertainment throughout what has been a rocky season, I would say. further thanks has got to go to all the opposition fans that have joined us this season. Thanks to Doc Brown for the Christmas special. That was absolutely brilliant. That was. And of course, to the former Palace players that have joined us along the way, the legend that is Vince Hilaire, Burnley hero Ian Walsh, not Peter Taylor's son-in-law, Stuart Green, Big Neil Shipperley, the unforgettable John Burridge, and the extremely forgettable Jamie Scowcroft. Wow, he was boring. Sorry, Sko. I must also thank the producers that we've had through the season, Tav, Tom and Samantha for their efforts in the early episodes, and thanks to Billiam for his brilliant work since the turn of the year. 15 episodes, so pretty much half the episodes Billiam's done, and honestly, if you got to hear the mess that we created before they make this listenable, you throw us firmly in the bin. Finally, thanks to all the whole radio panelists as well that have gamely answered my questions through the episodes. The two that have appeared the most throughout the season have been with me on the show tonight. So thanks to Lucy for being such a superstar in the 10 episodes that you've been on.
Thank you, Terence. It's been a pleasure.
And of course, thanks to for the first time tonight, the old git, Nick Philpott.
Well, we couldn't possibly go through a show without that being added in. let's do loads more next season. It's been great fun, too.
Indeed. While this is the final preview podcast of the season, it's certainly not the last whole radio podcast of the season. Hambo and Albert recently interviewed Sasha Churchich. So that will be included on the final review show of the season on Sunday night. So head to wholeradio.net/listen-live or facebook.com/wholeradio at 8 PM on Sunday night to listen in. Or catch up, as always, from around 10 PM onwards with the final podcast version of the show. So, that's it for the season. Any final words, Nick or Lucy?
Just to say that if anybody's about on Wednesday the 24th, there's a charity match at Selhurst Park where whole radio people are playing in, and there's a few celebrities and fans.
We'll be there, Lucy, won't we?
We'll be there. And all the money is being raised for the Palace Foundation. So if you're free Wednesday afternoon, come along and see us.
Indeed. Get down there. That should be a wonderful night. And if you know how to run the line, get in contact at Hull Radio. We're missing a linesman.
Excuse me? Okay, listener, just so you know what he's actually alluding to, that this old git that he keeps referring to is actually running one of the lines. So what he's trying to do is find a decent substitution for me.
Okay. So, look, again, appreciate you all for listening to us throughout the season. I think we've successfully felt our way around a bit now. So hopefully next season we'll be able to bring you a much slicker, nicer show, and something that you'll enjoy listening to. So until next season, up the Palace.
Homesdale Radio Freeview Podcast, sponsored by fanduel.co.uk. The next generation of fantasy football.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.